When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is the Jon Favreau as My Daddy podcast with Jessica Garcia and Monica Montoya.
Hello.
Hello.
Are you going to sing to me?
Honestly, no. Do you want to know why?
Why?
Because you're going to go see Ratatouille at the drive-in without me.
You're going to be in Colorado.
Colorado. What am I doing in Colorado?
Even if I wanted to bring you...
I could take a quick jet.
You want to come back right quick?
Yeah, I'll come back
right
quick.
And go right back over. Be yeah. Like, guys, I'm so sorry.
I'm sorry. I have to leave. I have to go see Ratatouille.
I have a very important engagement.
Yeah. That's insane to me that you're going on a second date with someone to go see Ratatouille. I feel like that's first date territory.
No. I don't sit in a car with someone on a first date.
Oh my God, you're so right. That would require you to like not feel like they're going to murder you in your sleep.
Well, that and also I just feel like that's a terrible like position to get to know somebody in.
You're staring forward.
Yeah, and but you're also like, but we should be talking about each other. But I guess I'll watch the movie.
That's true.
Also, you're just viewing me in profile the whole time.
Which is like no one's most flattering angle. I don't think it's anyone's most flattering angle.
No, it's really hard to pose.
It's hard to pose. You have to like have your chin up all the time. And yeah, like, who does that, you know?
I know.
It's like in 101 Dalmatians.
Okay, tell me more. How is it like that?
Okay, I saw this reel on Instagram because I'm not on TikTok, guys. Right, I'm sorry. Of what are the dogs' names in 101 Dalmatians?
The parents?
The dogs, Jessica.
I don't know.
They start. It's always with a P. Pongo.
Pongo is the parent. The dog parents.
No, Pongo is the dog.
Are the dog parents.
Pongo.
As in the mother and the father of the 101 Dalmatians. Jesus Christ.
Okay. Let's take it back. Pongo and Perdita.
Yes.
These are the two main dogs.
Yes,
the two
correct.
Main dogs. Have you seen the movie, the live action movie?
With Glenn Close?
Yes.
Obviously.
The way that they act in that movie, I mean, it's a fucking Oscar worthy. Are you kidding me? I was watching a reel of this, of like just the scene. Oh my God, that scene. That scene where the two dogs find out that their 101 Dalmatians are gone.
Yeah.
The acting.
So in what way is this similar to sitting in profile to somebody for an entire movie? I fail to see the connection.
Well, because, okay. So in that movie,
uh-huh.
In that scene when they find out that they've lost all of their Dalmatians,
right,
which
right.
I'm aware that I'm saying Dalmatians wrong.
Yeah, it's Dalmatians.
There's no getting around it anymore. I can't hear it the correct way in my head. It's rolling around in there like a fucking marble.
I think there is. You've just given up.
I've given up. That's right. Anyway, so these two larger Dalmatians, Pongo and the other one.
Perdita.
Yes, Perdita. Girl boss. Girl boss Perdita.
Perdita. Hashtag girl boss bitch.
Hashtag spots. She's a career woman. Anyway, she lost all of her puppies, and so they're like looking down and like looking straight at their dog parents,
right. Yeah,
and like they like look up and they're like their snouts are like pointed up at the sky, uh-huh. And they're like, why God, like why are all of our Dalmatians gone?
God.
Yes. But it made me think of that because their profiles are magnificent.
Oh. That was such a convoluted. You could have literally said that reminded you of anybody looking up at anything.
No, but these dogs specifically.
Oh, right, specifically.
Have gorgeous profiles. But well, human beings don't. So
I think some do.
I disagree.
Okay, well.
It's like there's the poster for Cruel Summer, Do you know Cruel Summer on Hulu? I just finished watching it. It's insane. It's like a fucking soap opera, but like teens. And like the poster is their side profiles.
Right.
Like of the two girls in the poster, like staring at it. It doesn't do anyone any good to have only their profile visible.
Well, then that enforces my point of do not go on a first date in a vehicle.
That's what I'm saying.
Don't
also
do it.
Have insurance.
but you should sing to me because this is an important episode, Monica.
All right. Ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you.
Yes.
Happy birthday.
Oh yes, get into it.
Jessica.
Ooh, yes.
Happy birthday to you.
Wow.
And many more.
Wow.
Congratulations. You're 1 year closer to death.
Thank you. I'm 26 years old. Not yet, because it's still 8 days till my birthday.
That's true.
But this episode is for my birthday. It's coming out the week of my birthday, which means I got to choose what we're doing for this episode.
Yeah. Yeah, she did.
Don't lie. I have the text messages. I'll post them on Instagram where you said that you liked these movies way more than you thought you would.
Where's the lie?
We must hold her accountable.
The lie? I mean, this is coming from the person who just finished watching before you came, Rugrats in Paris.
Like
the
a true
movie.
Icon, which means you recognize good art.
I recognized cinema when I see it. So where's my live action The Rugrats? Am I right?
That sounds scary.
That sounds terrifying.
Have you seen the animation for the new Rugrats?
Yes.
It's the stuff of nightmares.
They literally look like if The Sims was like a horror movie.
Yeah, but like three-dimensional.
But like 3D and disgusting. Like just so bad.
It's really bad.
Like I could do a better job and I can't even draw a dog. I'm just saying. It's like the first Toy Story when you look back on it now and you're like, oh my God.
You're like, that's kind of unsettling.
It looks terrifying. You're like, Woody, you okay, buddy? Like,
I mean, Sid's animation is the scariest.
Sid, you look.
His fucking face, man.
You look terrifying.
His teeth and the eyes.
He literally looks like he got stung by a bee. Like,
probably did. That's probably why he's such an asshole.
Like a wasp came through and was like, yo, buddy, let me feast on you. Let me feast on you.
Well, Monica,
mm-hmm.
who is it that you allowed me to choose for today?
The ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only, John Travolta.
Do that again. Sound more excited.
Ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only, John Travolta.
Much better. Much better.
Oh my God, you're welcome.
That's right. I chose to do John Travolta because I love him.
She's really obsessed. It's like him and only Johnny Depp and specifically Crybaby.
Yeah.
I was going to say, like, because it's not like she's into Pirates of the Caribbean that much.
No,
so.
No,
or
no.
Him.
Really, just exclusively Crybaby. Really, if you're an actor who's ever at one point played Elvis or a greaser, you're on my list.
Basically.
You're on my fucking list. Yes. So we're talking about John Travolta. I love this man. And I'm going to tell you about him, Monica.
Why don't you?
Alrighty,
you
right.
Fucking freak.
John Joseph Travolta.
Wow.
Is an American actor, producer, singer, dancer, pilot, and Scientologist.
Oh.
That's his one downfall, you guys.
I don't know about that.
Okay, well. His first significant role was as one of Sissy Spacek's bullies in the 1976 horror classic Carrie.
Which, by the
way, around,
so good.
But around the same time, he landed his breakout role as Vinnie Barbarino on the ABC sitcom Welcome Back, Kotter.
What the fuck?
A role that made him one of the hottest daddies of the late 1970s.
It's true.
It's really true. In 1976, he had a hit single titled Let Her In that made it to number 10 on the Billboard Hot 100 chart. I have listened to it many times. It's quite good, honestly.
Everyone, let her in.
He starred in Saturday Night Fever and received his first Oscar nomination at the ripe age of 24. He's still one of the youngest Best Actor nominees in Oscar's history. I think he's like number 5. And he also landed the starring role of Danny Zuko in everyone's favorite movie musical, Grease.
Not my favorite movie musical.
Shut up, Monica. This is my time. However, after being the gold.
I'm sorry. I just imagined you being like, it's the last midnight.
Get it together.
Okay, continue.
However, after being the golden boy of the late 1970s, he starred in a series of commercial and critical failures through the 1980s, leading his career to take a serious turn for the worst. Despite commercial success in the early 90s, Look Who's Talking franchise, it wasn't until his role in Tarantino's 1994 hit Pulp Fiction, for which he got his second Oscar nomination, that his career was revived. Since the late 90s, Travolta's career has been primarily not great, but he did get a Golden Globe nomination in 2016 for his role in American Crime Story, The People vs. O.J. Simpson.
Oh my God.
So that's nice for him. When he isn't acting, I would assume he's either hanging out at the Scientology Celebrity Center, he's been a practitioner since 1975, big yikes, or flying one of his 4 aircrafts.
They shouldn't let him in the sky if he's going to believe that stuff about the aliens.
He is also the literal daddy to 3 children. And while I do mock him for being a Scientologist, my heart does go out to the poor guy. He lost 2 partners to breast cancer and also hit one of his children passed away at the age of 16, which is very sad. So I want to give him a big hug.
Jesus, fuck, you ended that on the saddest note.
I'm sorry, but we have to make it known. He is a sympathetic figure.
Let's be raw and real. If we're not raw and real, what are we?
Then what are we?
We're nothing.
Also, props to him for really embracing his baldness now in his 60s.
Oh, yeah. I like that he's not, like, trying anymore.
Yeah, he had plugs for a while.
They did not look good.
They did not look good. His Wikipedia photo is one of the worst photos of his
It's literally trash.
It's really bad.
Oh, God. Anywho.
Anywho, Monica, what is the first movie?
Let's talk about the one, the only, my second favorite of the 3.
Yeah, okay.
Saturday Night Fever. Baby. Came out in 1977, written by Norman Wexler. Based on the story, Tribal Rights of the New Saturday Night by Nick Cohn. Directed by John Badham. The ham is bad.
I would assume maybe Badham.
Badham.
Badham?
Madam. Anxious about his future after high school, Tony Manero, played by John Travolta, a 19-year-old Italian-American from Brooklyn, tries to escape the harsh reality of his bleak family life by dominating the dance floor at the Loco Disco.
I love this. I love this accent we're doing.
It's me, Tony
Manero.
Tony Manero.
It is I.
Full disclosure, I'd never fucking seen this movie in my goddamn life.
Okay, I want your hot takes first. Come, give
hot take. Well,
or your opinions.
These are not even a remotely hot takes.
That's okay.
Because I'd never seen the movie and I'm assuming everyone else understands this.
Sure.
The soundtrack is fire.
Fucking fire.
Holy shit.
If you don't like the Bee Gees, ooh, I don't like you.
The Bee Gees are all over this fucking movie. So I had to look up the soundtrack after I watched this movie because I was like, oh my God, like who the fuck, like who picked these goddamn songs?
I think it's considered like one of the top selling movie soundtracks of all time.
It must be. The suit. Whoa.
Incredible.
What the fuck?
Incredible.
What's really funny is like in my research on this film, because I like watched it and then afterwards, like,
yeah, as we do,
did a little deep dive on it. It's apparently like a fucking classic look. Like apparently, which this coming out of my mouth sounds fucking stupid as shit. But like, this is apparently like a super classic iconic suit that has been like auctioned multiple times and like it's considered like a fucking relic or whatever, which is fucking crazy to me.
It's hilarious because it's not in the movie for very long.
No,
like that's the scene when, even if you haven't seen Saturday Night Fever, you know that you've heard of that scene, or you've at least
isn't
seen
it like
image?
on the like cover or something.
It's him doing the little disco pose, and so you're like, oh, this must be a central part of the movie, but it's really not.
What's really funny is it's really not.
Yeah.
So those two. And then, you know what? John Travolta can play punky, but lovable.
Mm-hmm.
Punky, but vulnerable.
Yes.
Punky, but I don't want to shoot myself.
Yes.
So
yes.
This movie for sure got me on the Travolta train.
Fuck yes.
Where I
guys,
was not before.
You heard it here first. Monica's on the Travolta train.
I really thought that, you know, in reading the synopsis for this movie and like the log line and stuff, like I thought it was going to be fucking cheesy as shit. Like I thought he was going to come out being like, I'm Tony Madero. But he actually played him very down to earth and very, he had a lot of like spunk and he was like a little punk ass bitch, mm-hmm. but didn't stop that from like letting some vulnerability peek through, which I really appreciated. So thank you, Johnny. Thank you for my first experience with Saturday Night Fever.
Well, I've seen this movie a few times and I love the beginning because like right off of the bat, this film is just like instant vibes. He's fucking out here. He's strutting down the street on his way to his job at the fucking like
paint store, which by the way, it threw me off completely. I was like, what the fuck?
He has to make money. He's 19.
Because he lives for the weekends, baby.
he lives for the weekends, baby. And like, this was his fucking like breakout film role. This is his movie. And you can tell that John Travolta is just like owning this role and he has this rhythm in him and he's just like fucking strutting. And you're like, okay, I'm on board. I'm on board for the shit that like we're gonna go through with this weird man.
Journey.
Tony Manero. Like he has so much charisma, but he's also so fucking naive.
Yeah.
And that's a really fun combination when you just see a man who lives for the disco.
I'm sorry, what?
He lives for the disco.
He really does.
I think what John Travolta does best in this role is making this character relatable, even if you in 2021 have no interest in disco, have no interest in dancing. We're not alive in the 1970s, and so you really like can't relate to some of the shit that's going on.
I sure fucking can't.
Like, even if you don't give a fuck about any of these things, you know what it's like to want more for yourself, and that's really ultimately like what the movie is all about. It's about John Travolta realizing that it weirdly reminds me of like part of Good Will Hunting, where like he realizes that he's in this it's not society, but like the circles that he runs in are holding him back, and he realizes that he can ask for more and like demand more from himself but feels bad about it. And I think that's something that like everybody can kind of relate to, is always like wanting to achieve that dream.
In a one of my notes is like, in a lot of ways, it reminded me of like Cinderella, but not in the sense of like, he becomes like, it all goes away after the fucking midnight or whatever. That's really not what it's about, but more so about like achieving this life beyond like your own corner.
Yes.
And beyond, again, like you said, like the circles that you run in.
Yeah.
And I think John Travolta specifically, like the flavor that he lends to this role is the experience that he has as a human being, being so young, but also in a way like really wise and like kind of about it and understanding like how the business works and like all this stuff sort of like lends to a very nuanced performance that's very mature, but also very like boyish and like punkish. And like, he doesn't make all the right moves. Like,
no, absolutely
not. Which is really funny because he doesn't miss a beat on the dance floor.
Oh, no. The disco is freedom.
The disco
is Manero.
Fire.
That is the only place where he feels like actually alive. Like, I love that fucking line. It's when they first get into the disco and his friends are passing around speed. And he's like, man, you guys can't just get high off dancing.
And they're like, no.
But like, that's what it is for him. He feels fucking alive.
He feels
because
free.
He feels like himself, or as like the himself that he perceives him to be at the age of 19, as much right. as any of us can know exactly who we are at 19.
That's absolutely true. And I think for in a lot of ways, it's a story about freedom. It's a story about finding who you are and like shedding all of the parts of you that you hate or all the parts of you that are like holding you back in order to achieve like your highest self or like your best potential
yeah.
or whatever. So, I mean, what John Travolta gives to this movie is icon, right? Like he's just a fucking icon in this goddamn film. He's able to take these like these juxtaposed ideas of like freedom and also like being confined to certain spaces because of like who he is and like where he comes from.
Exactly.
But doing it in such a way that's so goddamn like mesmerizing, you can't take your eyes off of him.
I know.
The entire fucking time. Also hips.
Those fucking hips, baby.
Also hips.
Also hips. I think why I'm so captivated by him, because like I'm not someone who, when I watch movies about like punky teenagers, I'm like not usually into that.
No one is.
But he plays the emotions in such a pure way. Like I think he has such an honesty to him, but he's also having such a good time doing what he's doing. But like he's cocky, but he's also lovable and he's also vulnerable. And when things happen to him, things that like to you and I might seem very small, that he feels very deeply, like I'm very impacted by it. Like I think of that scene where it's right before he goes to the disco for the first time and he's talking to his dad and they're at dinner yes. and he spent all that fucking time doing his hair and his dad smacks him upside the head and he's like, you know, I work on my hair for a long time and he hit it. He hit my hair. And he's like really offended in that moment because he cares so much about this and it's like a piece of his identity and he doesn't understand why everyone else doesn't is like can't understand that.
Yeah.
And to you or I, that's like, he hit your fucking hair, like calm the fuck down. Mm-hmm. But in the moment I was like, yeah, fuck him up.
Yeah.
He fucked up your hair.
Yeah, he fucked up your hair. Get
He's
your
attacking
boys.
Your identity, yeah. John.
You know, I think it's really funny because for a lot of people, their hair and their clothes and like their makeup really are their identity.
Yeah.
And that's not to say, like, that's not a bad thing at all. I think no. It's just like a fact of life is a lot of people sort of like hold on to these parts of themselves, like these small details that like tell people like exactly like who you are, where you come from, what you're about, like again, essentially like what your identity is, and like him holding on really tightly to these small details that tell everyone like who the fuck this bitch is. Like there's something to admire about that in a Tony.
Totally. And I think the last thing that I think I'll touch upon with this role is that I think like John does a really good job of making us trust him as we go to these kind of like dark and very complicated corners yeah. of this story. Cause there's some fucking dark shit
there's
in
some dark
this
shit.
Movie. There's some really bad shit. And the one, cause I don't want to get into the worst bits. That's just a big downer. But like, I think one big part of his journey is like in terms of his sexuality mm-hmm. and grappling with like, I'm like a young virile man.
I'm a hot-blooded teen.
And I want to like fuck girls, but also like I want to respect women, but the men around me are not. So I don't really know what to do because I'm trying to prove my manhood, but I also just like it's like it's that time in your life when you realize that not every person of the opposite sex is just for love and just for
consumption.
Yeah. And you go like, oh, these people can serve another purpose. And especially for a young man, like
young men.
And you can see how like conflicted he is because he really likes Stephanie, the girl that he ultimately ends up dancing with. He really likes her and like he wants her to be with him, but he's also like, I really respect her and admire her. And she's like pushing me to want more for myself. And I'm conflicted because like,
I'm conflicted.
I want to be around her, but she doesn't want me. And I'm okay with that.
That's really funny. I actually read a bunch of articles in my research of this film about like the misogyny in this film. Mm-hmm. And like a lot of articles that sort of were like, you know, 1,000 years since this movie came out. How does it stand up to the test of time? And since this movie came out 3 millennia ago,
yeah.
It's kind of, you know, people look back on it and are like, maybe it wasn't the best.
I mean,
as far as like, you know, misogyny and these like ideals of, sure. of manhood and these ideals of like sexuality and the exploration and like those pitfalls and things like that. So
yeah,
I wouldn't watch this movie to like become Tony.
No. I don't think he makes the right choices all the time, but it is really like it's fascinating to like watch him grapple with that, because I think that is another part of this that we can all really relate to, and him, like you seeing all of the tragedy that happens around him through his eyes that ultimately like are the things that make him break out of this world, and like it like foreshadows that he is gonna like leave home and move to Manhattan, etc., etc. So yeah,
it's a very mature role played by a very young man that mm-hmm. had a very clean grasp on his style and exactly who and what he was able to give to the table and put out there for the populations to see. And I think, you know, a lot of that is like, when you're that young, you'll sort of take any job, but also like this specific source material and like the really adult themes in this movie and the way that he navigates them, I can only really applaud John Travolta for being able to sort of like tackle this in the way that he did. Yeah. And come out the other side with as much charisma and style as he did at the end, while not missing any of those really intense beats.
Yeah.
And not sacrificing style for all of the like pitfalls and tribulations that happen in this movie, where he does give these huge glimpses of vulnerability that exists both within him and outside of him. So
yeah. Well, yes. I think unfortunately, like what was happening in his personal life while he was making the movie really colored this performance.
Amen.
Because he was like, he'd been with a woman who's like 15 years older than him or something, and they'd been dating for a long time. And she like suddenly died of breast cancer while they were filming this movie. And he had to
leave filming
to go to the funeral. And I'm like, no fucking wonder he can play this like weird boyish maturity so well, because unfortunately it's just mirrored in his personal life, which fucking sucks. But like, kudos to you, John, you pulled an incredible performance out of your ass.
Amen. Man, my boy just destined to lose loved ones.
Genuinely, like his life is really plagued with loss, and it's so very sad.
Oh my god.
I just want to give you a hug, John, if you're out there listening.
If you're out there, quit Scientology and I'll touch you.
Okay, yeah, that works. Okay, so the next movie, I would say the sleeper hit of the three.
Ooh, this is my favorite of the three.
It's a fucking good movie. Aaron, did you like this movie? Did you watch
this movie.
This is the one I told Monica to make sure you watch, because I think you would love this movie.
He had no fucking time at
it's fine.
All.
It's fine, past, but you like, do have to watch this movie anything. At some point, okay? Okay. He would love it. Anyway, the next film is Blowout, which came out in 1981, written and directed by none other than Brian De Palma.
Brian De fucking Palma. And it shows. Anyway, mm-hmm.
Seek Brian De Palma film.
We'll get into it.
Jack Terry, played by John Travolta, is an audio technician who makes his living by recording sound effects for low-budget horror movies. Late one evening, he is out recording sounds when he serendipitously witnesses and simultaneously records the audio of the assassination of a potential presidential candidate. After saving the life of a woman involved, played by Nancy Allen, curiosity gets the better of him and he begins to unravel the pieces of a nefarious conspiracy.
A conspiracy of the issue.
A conspiracy.
So, right off the bat, the opening of this movie mm-hmm. is iconic.
It's incredible.
You are instantaneously transported into the world of a like horny horror disaster movie.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Yeah. Where
very low budget. All the girls are like in like heavy makeup, really big hair,
and their boobs
skimpy outfits, their boobs are out. They're like showering. It's the dorms. Everyone's giggling. Everyone's laughing. And there's this guy who's like got a knife and he's like following girls around. It's like POV.
Yeah, it's POV of him like looking through the windows and seeing all the things that these like, I think they're like sorority girls.
Yeah, he's like looking in through the windows of like a sorority house essentially. Because the movie's called like Bloodbath of the Coeds or whatever the fuck. And so anyway, so just right off the bat, it is like transporting you inside the mind and the daily life of John Travolta's character, where he's doing these like mind numbing films, and sort of his whole angle is that he has way more potential than that. Like he has more to offer than just being like the sound man of these like shitty, horny horror movies that feature really low budgets and really sad girls.
The whole setup is that like you get to the end of the scene of this horror movie that you're watching, and then this girl, she's about to be stabbed, and so she lets out the scream, and it's the worst fucking scream you've ever heard. She's just like and then it pulls out, and then you see John Travolta sitting in the screening room with the director or whoever the fuck it is. And they're like, we got to get a better scream than this. Like, we have to record
and
a better scream.
The director can't believe that it's like her scream. Exactly. And so he's like, cut out all the sound except a scream. And then so he cuts out conveniently all the sound except for the one that's labeled the scream.
Yes.
Which is not how sound works, but okay. And so anyway, so like we're instantly sort of like transported into this guy's world, which I really appreciate. And there's obviously the stunning shot of John Travolta in his chiseled glory.
Oh my God. He looks so fucking good. It's at peak John Travolta, like long hair John Travolta.
Oh yes. With the like little wave.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The little like early 1981 waves.
Yes.
It's so good. And he's this fucking sound nerd. And then the plot thickens. The inciting incident is he's out recording these sounds on a bridge, and he's like, oh, I'll record this owl. Oh, I'll record this couple talking.
I'll record
and
this frog.
Out of nowhere, a car comes like barreling down the highway, and he hears a bang, and then the car flies into the lake. And he's like, oh, fuck. And so he drops his sound stuff and he goes and saves the woman, but then someone else in the car dies.
Which he didn't realize there was anyone else in the car.
Exactly.
He saw the woman, clocked the woman, saved the woman, and that was kind of that.
Exactly.
He gets to the fucking hospital, and the place is like bananas. The place has gone cuckoo banana slam.
The press is going wild.
The press is there. The police is there. The hot-blooded staff members of the potential president is there. Everyone's questioning why. Why, God? Why is our presidential candidate dead? Because apparently the other guy who was in the car was some kind of a governor.
Yes, exactly. So this is all the shit that sets up the insane chain of events of this film. But what I love about this character for him is, first of all, this is like an audio person's fucking wet dream, this movie.
Yeah.
Like the way that they do sound in the movie, first of all, incredible. And the way that they show like the work of it is also incredible. But that combined with Brian De Palma's like signature, like,
yeah,
shots,
beautiful. Like it's just a
those
stunning
dual
film.
Focus shots. Ugh. He does it like three times in this movie. It's his fucking trademark. That and the rotating shot, which he does at the end, and the rotating shot at the end with the fireworks.
Insane. And he's like,
bananas, bananas, good. It's
bananas,
so good.
Foster. Bananas fucking Foster.
It's so good. But anyway, as I was saying, because this is like a sound nerd's dream, it's funny because this. Like this movie and this role is ultimately all about competence. Like he gets involved in this fucking crime,
he's
in this
deep.
Criminal investigation
too deep,
because
man.
He wants to prove that he's competent.
And he knows. He's like, I know this. Okay. I'm in it.
Yeah.
I'm in it and I know what the fuck I'm doing. Believe me.
The whole conflict is that when he recorded it and he's going back over the sound that he recorded of the crash, he hears a gunshot before the tire blows out.
Exactly.
And he's like, oh fuck. So someone shot the tire out. This was an assassination attempt. This was, or success. This was.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I don't know what attempt you saw on this screen.
This was an assassination. This wasn't an accident, but nobody believes him. And that's the whole thing. That's going on.
That's the whole spiel.
And he's like, I must prove that this was an assassination.
And so you see this like sequence of John Travolta as as sound nerd, cutting together this like sound reel, because again, this was like the 80s. They used sound reels.
That scene is so good, where he's going back and forth over the sound so many times.
And a lot of it has to do with just De Palma's like deliciousness. Yeah. But mostly it has to do with like, and sort of my first John Travolta point is like, his insane ability to focus and like the hyperfixation that he's able to convey with just his eyes and his face and being able to like suck you into that and go, no, everyone stop. Look at how important the work I'm doing is. Everyone just shut the fuck up. Like, look at my shit. Look at it. Are you looking at it? Great. Let's keep looking at this together.
Yeah.
It's very engrossing. Like, in watching this movie, there was only so much I could do to like get distracted from it because he was able to like fucking pull you in.
Yeah, he really does.
Not a quality that you get in a lot of folks.
And also not one that I think you would think of automatically when you think about John Travolta, which is like the whole thing about why I wanted to talk about him in the first place, because like people our age especially think of John Travolta and they're like, Grease, Hairspray, Wild Hogs.
Timeless, Tommy.
Like, oh, he's a shit actor. But I'm like, he was actually a very good actor once upon a time.
Gather round, children. There was once a time when Mr. Travolta had talent and was deliciously good. And let me tell you.
Like, John Travolta had Oscar nominations. Like, you know, he was fucking good. And I think, like you said, he's so focused in this role, but weirdly also like probably the most relaxed I've ever seen him be.
It's like, obsessive and relaxed at the same time.
Yeah, he's just like so in his body. Like I said, it all comes back to competence, because he's like, this is fucking second nature to me. He's so focused on it, but this is just like, this is who he is. This is how he acts. And he's also like so boyish and so cute on top of it, but he's also very straightforward and there's no pretense to him. It's just like a really fascinating combination of things within this character to create a very three-dimensional character in a story that I think told by anybody else, like a thriller like this, I think in most circumstances, the plot would really overshadow the characters and they would kind of just be like little pawns. But all the characters are really three-dimensional and he really holds his own, I think, against the insanity of the plot.
Well, what's really funny is a role like this can very easily turn into like the obsessive person, right? And that obsession and like that trait of being like incredibly obsessive and like very sucked into this one thing and trying to prove, usually it's like trying to prove innocence or trying to prove a crime or trying to win a case. Like usually it's criminal, like, you know, criminal related or like, or like in a revenge movie, right? Like being so sucked into one thing that they can only really focus on the one thing and do the one thing.
Right.
And with a lot of other actors, it's really easy for a trait like that to fucking engulf the performance and just make it all about, okay, well, that's the obsessive guy.
Yeah, he's obsessed.
Right. And with John Travolta, it's so easy for you to be like, right? Like he's obsessed and he's XYZ.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah. I mean, he's obsessed with that, but also blah, 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 blah. Like it's very easy for me to sort of like see both things happening inside of his head at the same time.
Yeah.
And he holds a lot of that in his body and in his tone of voice when he's like talking to the people around him and explaining to them what the fuck's going on, because there's a lot of urgency in his voice. But at the same time, this like level of like tranquility and relaxation that exists only when you know what the fuck you're doing.
Exactly.
When you're calmly explaining to someone what the fuck is going on. Yes, it's urgent, but because you know what the fuck's going on, people are somewhat at ease.
Mm-hmm.
It's very alarming.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why when you finally get to the ending, it's so fucking,
oh my God,
horrible, because this man who the whole time he's just trying to prove like he's doing the right thing. He knows what he's doing. He knows best. And also like trying to protect this woman at the same time.
He has
like complicated feelings about her. Like he kind of likes her, but also she's kind of fucking weird and she's a part of like a blackmailing scheme.
Fucking Audrey from Little Shop of Horrors, bitch. Like, oh my God. Like, oh Jesus.
I'm a makeup artist.
Oh, you know, well, to make a black eye, all you gotta do is put the powder on your face and then, you know, put it there.
Like, shut up.
I know. But like, so when you finally get to the end and like, Aaron, I'm sorry, I'm gonna spoil this film for you. It's still rewarding, don't worry. So like the tape that proves all of this ultimately gets thrown into a lake because John Lithgow, by the way.
Young John Lithgow.
Super young John Lithgow.
Has all his hair?
Uh-huh.
What?
As a serial killer.
So good.
Is in this. He fucking chucks this recording into a lake.
Chucks it.
And then kidnaps Nancy Allen. And
naps
he's like
her.
Running to the Liberty Bell. By the way, we're in Philadelphia.
Yeah. So there's this whole like B plot about the Liberty Bell killer.
Yes.
Who like makes like the way that he marks his bitches, like the way that he marks the people that he kills
yeah.
is like by creating the Liberty Bell with a bunch of little tiny stabs.
Yes.
As if it was like a little work of art. It's sick and insane.
It's horrible, but he only does it to like cover up a cover up that he fucked up.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny, but also really,
it's so
really,
stupid. It's
really
stupid.
Sick. And so like ultimately, like John Travolta is listening because he has a little like earbud in Nancy Allen's ear. And so he's listening the whole time to her like being kidnapped, to her getting murdered.
Yeah, her screams. Like yeah. that's all captured
just
on
the
tape.
The way that they use sound as like another plot device in this, it's fucking brilliant.
It's like its own character.
It's so good. And like it just plagues him. And so ultimately he finds her dead fucking body.
Yeah.
He does not catch the murderer. And then but he has a recording of her scream. And then he uses the scream in the movie.
To overdub the woman. Yeah. Who couldn't scream uh-huh. properly. Who was like,
And the last shot of the movie is just him sitting in this screening theater.
And he's just like
fucking wrecked. His face is wrecked.
Like R-E-K-K-E-D, wrecked.
Listening to this scream. And it's almost like because he thought he was so fucking competent.
So clever.
And so clever and so smart. And he failed. He fucking failed at the one thing he prides himself on doing.
Honestly, the only thing.
Exactly. And so he puts it in the movie almost as like punishment forever. Yeah,
where he has to like always hear it.
Exactly.
And he puts it in the thing that he fucking hates the most, which mm-hmm. is the fact that he does these goddamn movies because he used to do something useful.
Yep.
Which was like, or what he deemed useful, which, because I think B horror movies are pretty fucking useful. He used to basically like tap wires yeah. and create like, you know, recordings for cops, like undercover cops that are like going into like bust crime syndicates and yeah. like also internal affairs and like that kind of stuff. So he basically puts it in the thing where he's like sentencing himself to like the eternal punishment mm-hmm. of having to listen to this over and over and over again in the process of making a movie. And if you know, like when you're making a movie, you're watching it, you're listening to it, and you are recutting it
yep.
every day of your fucking life until it's done for years. It takes yep. years to make a fucking movie. So this guy is just fucking punishing himself
yep.
like a goddamn rooster.
It's fucking brilliant, Brian De Palma. And apparently this is the movie that Tarantino saw John Travolta in, and like this is why he wanted Travolta in Pulp Fiction, because he saw this movie. And just fucking brilliant. Everything yeah. about this movie is amazing. The score is incredible.
Ooh, it is good score.
Yes.
I like frog in film. Frog is good.
It's Pino Donaggio.
Ooh.
I think that's how you say his name.
Wait, Pino yeah. Noir. Pino the Frog. yeah, this movie truly blowed me away. Go see Blowout. It's on Amazon Prime. It's for freezies. It's yeah. gonna be gone in like 20 days or something.
Yeah, it's genuinely a sleeper hit.
Yeah, she's a sleeper hit.
Yeah, commercial failure, critical success.
Get on her, baby. Get on her.
Okay, Monica, bring it home. What's the last one?
All right, ladies and gents, I'm going to
bring
home.
Your least favorite of the three.
I know, my least favorite of the three, but not by John Travolta's fault.
I know.
It's someone else's fault. Someone who really likes feet.
Listen, we've talked about one of his movies before already.
Best Friends. Best Friend of Robert Rodriguez. So this movie is Tropicana Pulp Fiction. Pulp Fiction came out in 1994, written by Quentin Tarantino and Roger Avery, and directed by Quentin Tarantino.
Quentin
Tarantino, BFF to Robert Rodriguez, bad actor in the mariachi franchise. Terrible.
All right, Monica, tell us about this movie.
All right. Ready, baby?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Pumpkin, played by Tim Roth, and Honey Bunny, played by Amanda Plummer, are two thieves who, while dining at a coffee shop, decide that the best thing to do is to rob it. You're mine now, rabbit. Vincent Vega, played by our boy John Travolta, yes, and Jules Winifield, played by Samuel L. Jackson, two hitmen working for mob kingpin Marcellus Wallace, played by Ving Rhames, are sent to retrieve a very special and very mysterious briefcase for their boss. Vincent has also been tasked with showing the drug-addicted Mia Wallace, played by Uma Thurman, a good time while her husband is out. Butch Coolidge, played by my favorite, Bruce Willis, is an aging prizefighter who's being paid to, quote-unquote, take a dive, but instead accidentally kills his opponent and tries to flee town, but not before getting his dead father's lucky golden watch. These seemingly unrelated stories intertwine as four tales of violence and redemption, not unlike Love Actually.
This is exactly like Love Actually.
This is basically the same. Guns. It's the same exact movie as Love. So like think Love Actually.
Yeah.
Pero con guns. And also Uma.
It's also a lot like Valentine's Day.
Oh, yes. And also New Year's Eve.
And also he's just not that into you.
Oh, that one too, yeah, also. Yeah.
These are all the same movie.
It's all the same. If you close your eyes, it's all the same movie. They've all been nominated for Oscars. Yep. It's all good.
Yep, 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 yep. Well, I know you don't love this movie, but I love this movie. I love this movie for a lot of reasons. I have complicated feelings about Quentin Tarantino, but ultimately I really like the movies he makes. And I think this movie is one of those movies where just like he has perfected that dialogue style of just like talking about nothing. He's like defying everything that people tell you not to do when you write a script.
That's so true.
Because the dialogue doesn't like move the plot forward very much.
It really doesn't.
It's so interesting. It's still so engaging to me, at least. I like this movie.
What's really fucking funny and the thing that I find very surprising about myself is that I really don't like Tarantino's like that style of dialogue, right? Where you're really talking about nothing and nothing is really moving the plot forward, but the dialogue is there to sort of just like entrance you and suspend your disbelief and bring you into that world. And the reason why I'm very surprised at myself and continuously am surprised at myself for not liking that is because it's that I love plays.
Yeah, and you love dialogue,
and
period.
In theater, 90% of the time, people are just talking out of their fucking ass, having a conversation so that you can suspend your disbelief and just be in the action with the actors.
Yeah.
And that's what's happening here, but I hate it here.
Thanks, I hate it here.
I hate it here. And so it's just really funny because, again, it's... I don't even know why, but I just continue to surprise myself as to why I don't like this style because I like it everywhere else.
Right.
It's like saying that you don't like tomatoes, but you like tomato sauce. What the fuck's up with that?
I mean, that's me, baby.
Okay, see?
I also don't like catsup.
Yeah, you're fucked up. That's what it is.
I'm fucked up in the head,
you're
man.
You're fucked up in the head, man.
I think one of the best parts of this like dialogue about nothing specifically is the first scene that you get with Samuel L. Jackson and John
That's
Travolta.
Yeah.
I do think that in that moment, regardless, it's objectively good.
It's objectively a fantastic scene.
Because when you juxtapose what they're talking about versus what they're going to do, it's fucking hilarious. Like that's peak comedy, but nobody's laughing.
It is platanos.
Because they're talking about like fucking what they call Big Macs in France.
Yeah.
And they're on their way to murder multiple people.
Literally kill people.
Yeah, they're hitmen.
And they're talking about fucking McDonald's.
Uh-huh.
Like it just, but not just any McDonald's, like McDonald's round the world.
Yep. Yep. And John is just sitting there. He's fucking cool, calm, collected.
Very, and again, bringing this like relaxed nature to an otherwise convoluted and insane purpose, right? Like his life's purpose and his current career choice is to take the life of people around him in various scenarios, like in various crime syndicates, in front of his boss's way, like whatever it may be, it's like chaos follows them and chaos ensues. However, he remains like the iceberg waiting for the Titanic to hit him and then becoming completely unbothered after the fact.
And I think it's at least partially because Vincent Vega is like a little dumb. He's a very smart hitman, but like he's also a little...
He's dim.
He's very dim because he's just sitting there like, Royale with cheese.
Royale with cheese.
Like that's the only fight when they get into the apartment to shoot these guys. That's the only line he has because Samuel L. Jackson is the one delivering the whole fucking monologue to that guy, Brett.
Yeah.
And then like John Travolta's just pacing in the background, like poking around in this kitchen. And then they ask him the question, like, what do they call a Big Mac in France? He's just like, Royale with cheese.
And he says it. What's really funny is he says it both very ashamed that he knows that and also very proud that he knows that.
Uh-huh. And he's like, I bet you don't know this.
Bet you don't know this. And then immediately feeling like, oh, well, you know, okay. Yeah, yep. Yeah. It's like when someone is like, does anyone know any fun facts? And you bust out one about like seals or some shit or like sea lions. And then like everyone around you is like, cool, Brad. Like... And you're like, what the fuck? Like, why didn't I say the one about Chuck E. Cheese? Everyone loves Chuck E. Cheese. Like, it's a whole thing. So, anyway.
Anyway, yeah. So Vincent Vega is like this vaguely dim, but like, he's just like very calm and observant and very quiet. And then he's tasked with this thing of like having to take care of Uma Thurman, aka Mia Wallace.
Essentially not just take care, but like babysit her and like make and, like, sure
entertain
that she
her.
Make sure she doesn't like get into any trouble. And by trouble meaning like in the way, basically. Yeah. She has to remain out of people's feet.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really funny because there's feet all over this fucking movie.
Especially Uma's.
Uma's feet. Uma's like what? I don't know. She's like a size 8 from what I can see. Uma's size 8 is all over this fucking movie.
I will say though, as much as I hate his love of feet, the one shot of her like crossing her foot behind her back is a really good shot. Like I gotta give it to him. It's a great fucking shot.
Yeah.
It's her intro shot before you even see her face. You see her little foot cross behind her.
Hate my life.
It's so fucking good.
I hate it here.
The intro of Mia Wallace over the intercom is a brilliant character
so
introduction.
Good. And her character is just so like mesmerizing and like so like vaguely interesting and mysterious enough to where you're like, who the fuck is this bitch?
Yes.
You're like, who is she? Do I want to be her friend? Do I want to be hers? Do I hate her? I don't know. Like, you don't know.
And it's so funny because like Vincent Vega doesn't give a shit.
He doesn't give two rats.
He's
tails.
Just like there exist. It's not even like he doesn't give a shit. He's just
existing. And
he's there because he has to be.
He's there because this is what fascinates me about John Travolta in this movie. He is there because of the circumstances by which he is there, but mm-hmm. to no other extent, to no other end,
mm-hmm.
right? So whenever you see a character on screen and they have their motivations and you're like, okay, well, to what end,
mm-hmm.
right? That question isn't even a question in his mind.
Yeah.
And that is something that John Travolta is able to very easily convey to the audience of like, my character is truly just here existing.
Yeah.
And he is, you know, if you want to talk about like being present and in the moment, there is no one like Vega being able to just be in the moment.
Exactly.
And like, not even in the sense of like, I'm just going to be in the moment and like enjoy myself.
Yeah.
Like in the sense of like, nothing else matters because I'm just doing the task at hand
mm-hmm.
and the thing I'm supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
But there is no to what end.
Exactly.
Which is fascinating.
Yeah.
And riveting.
And that's why when you get reactions out of him, and I think specifically of the in this section with him and Uma Thurman, they're so good and so riveting. Like, she takes him to this fucking place, Jackrabbit Slim's, which should be a real fucking restaurant.
It really
I would
should.
Go all the time.
I would go.
And Steve Buscemi is their waiter.
I know.
Dressed as Buddy Holly in a very early cameo.
Yeah, Steve Buscemi, who Robert and Quentin share.
Yes. They share him. They pass him between the two. you can't have him this weekend. It's my weekend.
What? They share custody of Steve Buscemi.
They share custody. But anyway, so John Travolta's just like existing in this weird fucking restaurant. But then like Uma like genuinely perplexes him at various turns. Like when she orders a $5 shake, that's what brings him out of this. And that's the hilarious part is paying $5 for a shake is what, that's what perks his ears up. And he goes, excuse me, you say $5 shake? What's in a $5 shake?
But what's even funnier is the line comes out in the most soft spoken voice.
Yes.
In the, like, John Travolta is a walking juxtaposition, mm-hmm. right? He looks very chiseled and angular and very, like, assuming, mm-hmm. right? The AKA the opposite of unassuming.
Correct.
And like he could at any point in time have something incredibly important to say.
Yeah.
Yet when he opens his mouth, it is the most soft spoken, most calm, mm-hmm. most relaxed, and most present thing that you will hear all fucking day. Mm-hmm. It is mind fucking. Mm-hmm. And part of the reason, and may actually be the reason, why most people are so drawn to him.
Yeah. Absolutely. And then there's the added layer of the fact that he's fucking supposed to be high on heroin this entire time. Because just before going to get Uma, he went to Eric Stoltz's house.
Yeah. And went for it.
Who's his drug dealer and just fucking shoots up right there.
He shot up. It was casual. It was casual.
Super cash. Super, super cash.
Casual heroin. Yes. Heroin Friday. You know yes. what I mean?
Like, And for most of the time when he's sitting there talking to Uma, he's not even fucking looking at her.
No.
He's like looking down, delivering his lines or just reacting. And it really says something about someone to be that captivating, to get fucking Oscar nominated for looking down while you're interacting.
Looking at your goddamn shoes.
Yeah, while you're interacting with Uma Thurman.
Uma Thurman, AKA Poison Ivy.
Yes. Do you know who she is?
Do you know who she is?
But because I feel like their characters are similar in weird ways.
In such strange and unnatural
ways.
They
do the dance, and the dance is amazing. It's an amazing scene. It's just like an endless scene. And they form this like weird bond, and you're just like, okay.
Okay, I'm in it. I'm
fucking
in it
with these two people. Yeah. Even though like, you know that their time will come to an end shortly.
Oh, yeah.
Not like in the sense that they'll both die, but like
they won't be around.
They're not going to be hanging out anymore.
It doesn't happen anymore. Yeah. They do not come to their demise together, guys.
Exactly. But I mean, she almost does.
I mean,
because she ODs.
Because y'all know the shot of her fucking nose. But I digress.
But like that near-death moment brought them even closer. And so you're just like, wow, we really built a relationship here tonight.
There was really that Noah's Ark. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yes, exactly. It's sad because ultimately John Travolta does die in this. He dies in the middle of the movie.
Yeah, he rests in
but
peace.
But because it's told non-linearly, mm-hmm. is that a word? He comes back at the end and has like a really amazing scene with Samuel L. Jackson while they're getting held up in the diner. And I love that you're left with like seeing their dynamic, because their dynamic is one of the most captivating in the movie, because Samuel L. Jackson is like this fucking crazy, like borderline whimsical man who quotes from the Bible all the time. And John Travolta just like sits there. But then in that last scene, he finally gets to speak up and he has this line where he's just like, I've got a threshold, Jules. I have a threshold of abuse I'm willing to take.
I'm willing to take.
And you're like, dude, this is the first time you've stood up for yourself in this whole fucking movie.
For this whole goddamn film.
And it's so funny. John Travolta is very funny, and I don't think he gets enough he doesn't get enough credit for anything.
He's like sneaky punchy.
Yeah.
Very sneaky punchy.
He understands his role within a comedy.
He gets it.
Yeah, he just like gets it. I love this man.
Oh, Johnny. Johnny boy.
Well, that's John.
That's Johnny T, baby.
Happy birthday to me.
Happy birthday, Jessica.
I love you, John Travolta.
He loves you too.
I love Grease. I love it all.
I'm surprised why you didn't do Grease.
I don't have a lot to say about the character of Danny Zuko.
Danny Zuko exists for his hair.
Like, if we want to talk about Grease as a whole movie, I have a lot to say. But Danny Zuko's kind of an asshole. he's just a really fun character.
I don't know. I'm a fan of Peggy Sincox.
You mean the wet blanket of the
that's
movie?
My bitch.
You would be a Peggy. Oh, it's Patty. Patty Sincox.
Whatever. This fucking...
Oh, yeah, you really love her.
P. Dot Sincox.
Oh, man. Okay, Monica, what have you dabbled in?
I have dabbled in Rugrats in Paris.
Oh, do tell.
Which I did watch before you came. I wanted to talk a little bit about it because I, in watching it again, realized how heartwarming it was, oh, truly. It's really,
I remember that movie making me cry when I was a kid.
It's basically about how Chucky does not have a mom, yes. Which Chucky's the one with really like red hair and like the glasses who talks like this. Tommy!
Tommy Pickles.
And so when you like walk in, when you walk into this movie.
When you enter Rugrats when you in Paris.
Enter Rugrats in Paris.
The VR experience.
Yes. when you enter Rugrats in Paris, the VR experience. It's like starts with a scene from The Godfather and Angelica is like.
I forgot about that.
And. Angelica's like, you come to me on the day of this fucking wedding. Like, well, what the fuck do you want? And Tommy's like, I wanna, you know, my brother lost his fucking binky. I mean, they don't curse.
My brother lost its fucking binky.
And what are you gonna do about it, boss? And she's like, I'll see what I can do. And so when it comes to Chucky's turn, he's like, Angelica, I know what I want. And she's like, well, what do you want? And he's like, I want a new Bobby.
I want a new Bobby.
I want a new Bobby. And she's like, okay, well, the game's over, you little bitch. Like, I can't do anything about it. But anyway, I fucking love this movie. There's so much that took me back. The Pickles is apparently the dad is a goddamn mechanical engineer. I never fucking realized that until this. Yeah. And he's living in like he's not like the richest of all of them, which is surprising to me that he's like the chief engineer on like the fucking, what's his name? Reptar, giant Reptar robot. But the man isn't the richest of the gang. Capitalism. The one woman is. Do you remember?
The Angelica's, career bitch?
No, Angelica's mom.
Yeah, career bitch. Yes. She's always on the cell phone.
Yeah, girl boss.
On the cell phone?
And it shows, you know, it's the shot of them all on the plane and only Angelica and her family are in first class. That's and everyone so else is in coach. Classism. I'm just like, what happened, man? The members of society that should be earning. I'm just kidding. I literally don't even know what Angelica's mom does. So there's nothing for me to say about that.
She's a hashtag girl boss. That's all we know.
She's just a girl boss, guys. all I really have to say is that there are so many bangers in this movie. Mm-hmm. And not just that, but it took me down memory lane. It makes me want to watch the first Rugrats movie. Which is just the Rugrats movie. This one was the Rugrats in Paris movie.
I would say the better of the two, perhaps.
Which is really funny because they're in Paris, but they spend most of their time in a Tokyo theme park.
Yeah.
Like a Tokyo-themed theme park.
Well, they had to have a reason why, what's his name? Chucky's dad fell in love with, like, an Asian woman.
Oh, yeah. That's true. What's her face? What's her name? Her name is, like, fucking... Lisa or Penny or something like that.
I have no idea.
I don't know. All I know is...
I know her daughter's name is Kimmy.
Yes, her daughter's name is Kimmy, and she's arguably the cutest of the Rugrats.
She wears purple cowboy boots.
She's so cute. Regardless, Chucky's dad is like this like wimpy little shit who like decides to marry this theme park like mogul.
Uh-huh.
Which is so bizarre. And she's like, you fucking children. You fucking...
Madame Labouche.
Madame Labouche. Anyway, whatever. I'm going to stop talking about this fucking movie.
Yeah, this is like a fourth movie.
Sorry. What is your dabble, Jessica? Happy birthday.
Thank you so much. I mean, that was a gift. I really loved you.
You're welcome.
All the voices. I could have watched you do a play-by-play of that whole movie all night.
Ew.
My dabble is, okay, I have gone to two, count them,
2. Live comedy performances. Now, since the state of California or the county of Los Angeles, I don't know which one.
I don't know.
Has opened officially. And it was a fucking trip, man.
Where did you even go?
So the first time I went to the Comedy Store.
Who'd you see?
I went to they have these $15 shows that they do in the Belly Room where I don't want to say that it's like amateur night, but it's like
lesser known.
Lesser comedians. Some of them were bad.
Lesser comedians?
Some of them were really good. And at first I was like, oh, this is so cheap, but they make you do a 2-drink minimum. So it's really like a $50 show.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, I know. It's bullshit.
I hate Los Angeles.
I know. So I went there and it was like max capacity in the theater, like no distancing.
Damn.
Masks off. It was fucking wild, but it was so fun.
Oh my God.
I know. Okay. And then last night I went to an improv show. So my favorite improv group from UCB, their name is Big Grande.
Oh.
They did their first show back and it was free and they passed out free beer and it was in an unair-conditioned theater on Melrose.
Dude, I know where the UCB theater is.
It's not, it wasn't at UCB. It was at a different theater.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it was at the Yard Theater. It's on the part of Melrose that is almost at Hoover.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I was going to say, before you interrupted
me. I'm sorry.
Because I know where the UCB theater is and it's not on Melrose.
Exactly. <You're> Yeah, so I went to that, sweated my fucking ass off.
Fucking.
My fucking.
I sweated my fucking ass, which by the way, if you didn't see the ghosts, watch the Matt Damon, listen to the Matt Damon episode, go listen to that.
Yeah, it's so good.
Listen to your ears off.
But you have to watch The Departed first.
Fuck The Departed.
Anyway, so we were packed in this theater because it was sold out.
Like fucking sardines.
Exactly. And they had the theater lights on and everyone was sweating. Genuinely, you could see everyone dripping. It was disgusting.
Was it sweating like Harry sweated when he went to go deliver Charlotte's papers in Sex and the City? And he was sweating all
Not
over it.
Not quite that bad. But one of the guys on the improv team had sweated through his entire shirt.
That's disgusting.
And then another one, he grew his hair out kind of long during COVID.
It's fucking,
and
no.
It was just sticking wet that's in gross. The front. Ugh. It was fucking gross. But it was such a great time. They didn't ask me if I was vaccinated, which I'm not saying that that's a good thing, but it genuinely was the most normal public experience I have had in the last year and a half. And I loved it.
You know what? I have not popped that cherry yet. I have not popped the cherry of the quote unquote, the 100% normal experience mm-hmm. quite just yet.
Yeah. Nobody was masked at any point. They didn't ask if you were vaccinated. They didn't distance you. Nothing.
Listen, I'm ready to flash my V card whenever, wherever.
Whenever, wherever you and me together, I'll be here and you'll be here. I'll be here and you'll be near. I mean, they're the same.
Lolly, lolly, lolly.
Oh, boy.
And on that note.
We don't have a question.
No.
Do you want to ask me a question?
Oh, I'll ask you a question for your birthday.
Okay, yeah.
Let me think of one.
Okay.
Let me ask you 26 questions.
Oh, one for every year.
Number one. I'm just kidding. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
What was your favorite birthday present that you ever got in your life?
Oh,
and this can be from the age of 0 to the age of 26.
This is a really, really hard question.
Okay.
Well, I've gotten, my family is very good at gift giving. So I know that I have gotten incredible gifts. One year I got a Barbie Lamborghini when I was little, which at the time was fucking dope.
Oh my God. At the age of 18.
That was my first car.
a Barbie Lamborghini.
But, I think the first one that comes to mind, at least as my favorite, is for my 16th birthday. Shout out Allison, friend of the pod, my BFF. She lives in Seattle. So for my 16th birthday, she gave me the script to The Breakfast Club, which I was a big John Hughes fan in high school.
Oh, honey. Everyone
obsessed.
Was.
I was when he died, I cried.
Of course you
did. It was awful. I'd seen all of his movies, but anyway, so she got me the script to The Breakfast Club, and then she wrote me a really beautiful letter on the inside cover, and I still have it, and it's very aww. Sentimental and sweet. Yeah, it's pretty
good.
That's
really nice.
Yeah.
I thought it'd be something more fascinating.
You bitch.
Like you got like a cupcake, but then the cupcake turned into like a transformer and the transformer took you away. You had an affair. No. It was back in time and you came back here.
My ex-boyfriend, the transformer.
You outlived all your children. It was like a whole thing, but it didn't happen in that way.
You're right. Well, that's something for you to give me next year.
Okay.
You got to outdo him.
Let me call up my boy Pickles. My mechanical engineer Pickles. Let him build me one. You know what I mean?
I know.
And it all goes back to Rugrats in Paris, baby.
As all roads do.
All roads lead back to the Rugrats.
Yeah. Well, as always, Monica.
Don't sue us, Daddy Favreau.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.